Good evening, everybody. This is Winfrey, and this is our Monday night, I forget the word. What's it called? What is the word? When I simulcast. Our Monday night simulcast, which is our internet broadcast and our conference line. And this is it started out as a conference call, and now it's being broadcast all over the planet, over the internet. And thank you for being with us. And who just came in on the line?
Hi, it's Marianne.
Hi, Marianne.
Hello.
Well, let's see. I almost, believe it or not, I almost forgot I was doing this show tonight. And I said, oh my God, I got so occupied in my day. So we have Marianne. Do we have Kathy?
Yes, I'm here, Wynn.
And do we have Terry?
I haven't heard Terry coming in.
And do we have Suzanne?
Nope.
Let's see, who else is on? We have Wayne.
Yes. Wayne's on.
Wayne's on. And who else?
Francis in California.
And Francis, and who else?
Alan.
Who?
A gentleman named Alan.
Alan in
Sedona.
Alan? Yeah, I'm here.
Are you in Sedona?
I am.
Oh, it's so nice to hear you. Hey, did you get my notice about the thing I'm doing at the Creative Life Center?
No, I didn't.
I'll send you.
Take a look.
You wrote a message a day, right?
I haven't read it yet.
Okay. So put it in your book for February 7th, okay?
Appreciate it.
And so for everyone that's listening, I'd like to say that you are involved in a huge experiment that thus far, even though we haven't reached huge amounts of people, it's been pretty successful in the way it works. And this experiment has to do with learning how to have the experience of expanding what I call your hologram, or your matrix, or your position in the matrix, to a higher position of reality than you're normally accustomed to. And if it feels good, you can get accustomed to living and experiencing your life from a higher position in the matrix. And maybe that vocabulary is strange, because on one level, we're all in bodies, and to all practical purposes, we seem like we're a body. And the body has its ways of sensing the world. It's got a nose, so it can smell things. It's got a mouth, so it can communicate. And it's got emotions, so it can feel things. And it's got levels of pain. When something hurts you, so you have an experience of yourself in your body, and you have all that goes with it. And everyone, of course, has a different body, and thus a different experience. And it's my belief that part of the experience that you have is connected with something that we could call a track. Did someone just come on the line? Like to say their name? You're just listening. Okay, that's fine. I'm going to mute everybody.
All callers are muted.
And you have a track. And your track is like everything you've ever done this lifetime. And if you want to believe that you have past lifetimes, all your past lifetimes. So who you are right now is the culmination of your track. And each of us has a different track. And to some degree or another, our tracks have caused us to compress to what we could call a small segment of our potential hologram. So, what do we mean by this? How do we understand this in our logical mind, since the hologram is invisible to us? So, how do we know there's a hologram, and what's the evidence that it's so? Well, let me describe how it works so that you can visualize it, and go with me and say, maybe I'm right, but don't believe me, we just consider the possibility. The best analogy that I've come up with is to think of yourself compared to a computer. And a computer has a main computer with a hard drive that stores huge amounts of information and programs. And then it has a monitor and a keyboard. Now, the computer itself could be under the table, could be, you don't have to see it. It can be beyond, you wouldn't even have to know that it exists, theoretically, to use it. But you do need a monitor and a keyboard. And the monitor shows you all these different programs on the computer, and the keyboard opens up a program. So, your knowledge of how to input and get a program out of the computer is how flexible you can work that computer and how deep you can go into it and get programs out. Well, the computer could be looked at as the part of you that's invisible, that's in the hologram. And the monitor and the keyboard could be looked at as the part of you which you're aware of. And that you as a human have the ability to learn the right programs or the right program keys. How do you input that program to pull down things that are in your hologram that are latent, so to speak? Now, to give you an example of that in my own life, when I was younger, when I was in high school, I remember looking at a radio and wanting to know how that radio worked. So I bought a book on how radios worked. And at that time, they were tubes. They were called superheterodynes. And it was like this huge mystery. Here you plug this thing into the world and turn it on and sound comes out. So I read this book on how radios work, and I didn't know this when I was doing it, but in my computer, my own soul computer, I had been very technical in different lifetimes. And so when I read this book, it woke up that technical part of myself. And so the way you would talk about that in the English language is you would say that I had aptitude. Well, why does somebody have aptitude? They find out that they start doing something and it comes much easier to them than it would for someone else. It's because they've done that some place in their track, and when they start doing it, it wakes up all the previous connections they have aptitude, okay? So I thought I wanted to be an engineer, and then I wanted to be a physics professor. And I went to Berkeley, and I started out as a physics major because I had aptitude in technical things and this curiosity for learning how things worked. And I actually, when I was 13 years old, I remember I became a ham radio operator. And so I would go home after school, and I'd have these big transmitters, And I actually built a transmitter from scratch, and it was in my bedroom. And it was very unusual for someone that was 14 years old to build a transmitter and be talking all over the world. And I had antennas on the roof, and I put them up myself. And I could do this because I had opened up a program that was in my soul matrix that somehow came easily for me. And I got a commercial radio license. And I started working. When I went to school in Berkeley, I started going back to Philadelphia, and I used to work at TV stations because my commercial radio license gave me the ability and the credentials to get a really good job at a TV station. And I would sit there, and I would do sound, and I would do video, and in those days it was all manual, it wasn't computerized, so it took a team of three people to keep a station on the air, and I was one of the three people, and I was making, for those days, a small fortune. I was part of the, I think the union was called IBEW, and I think I would come back from school, and I was making something like $600 a week, which was a huge amount of money. I probably, people that do that now probably make a couple thousand a week. Or more. So, it seemed to me, you're supposed to have a job, and this is a good job, and I'm good at this, and I thought I was then going to go to Berkeley and be a physics professor. And I had opened up that program, and I was just going happily along thinking that was what my life was going to be. And then, when I was in Berkeley, it's the way things happen. I was really influenced when I was younger by singer-songwriters. I would say Bob Dylan was probably my biggest influence. And I used to listen to his lyrics, and I don't know how many of you were influenced by Bob Dylan, but he was able to speak to me at a level that I had never been spoken to before. And his lyrics were conveying a deeper aspect of myself than no one knew about. In other words, I wasn't sharing it with anyone, but I knew that he knew, or he connected with it. And when I look back at it now, I'm almost certain that in some of his lyrics, he was actually channeling. And the way he expressed things was able to set off triggers in my consciousness. And I think he was connected to the Ra Group. Those of you that have listened and understand the Ra Group, that is this group soul that can blend with us, and that when you're like in a neutral space, you can get their thoughts or their projections, if you're open to it, giving you guidance. And so I think that's what Bob Dylan was doing. Of course, I didn't know any of that at all at that time. I just knew he was able to speak to me. And I could feel a shift of my consciousness when he did that. And then I remembered when I was in high school, other songs would speak to me in certain ways. Joni Mitchell would speak to me. And then sometimes there was even a very commercial song that would speak to me. Like there was a song by Holland Dozier Holland that the Four Tops did called Reach Out, I'll Be There. And something in me was really compelled by that lyric. I'll be there with the love. And I remember driving in my car, and I don't even know where I was going, but I remember hearing that song, and it was like something lifted me. And I had, I don't know if out-of-the-body experience was correct. I would say more an expansion of my hologram. And I went into all this joy and ecstasy while I listened to that song. So when I was in college, I said to myself, you know what, I really like this music stuff. And I started writing lyrics down to other people's music. And I had learned to play guitar slightly. And I kept writing lyrics to other people's music. And occasionally I would try to sing what I'd written to somebody. And I was a terrible singer at the time. I mean, my chakras were all blocked up. But I was still had this potential for being deep in myself and seeing things at a deep level. So when I sung songs to some of my friends, they were kind of stunned because suddenly they really connected with what I was saying, even though it was so far from the way that I would consciously share with them. So I was encouraged to keep writing lyrics. And then I told this story in another show, and I'm not going to tell the whole story, but what I had done was I tapped into another program. Not the engineering technical program, but when I started writing lyrics, I had an aptitude for it, and it started to activate this program in my computer, or my subconscious, or my hologram, that suddenly I didn't even realize I was talented at that time. I just said, geez, this is helping me connect with people because I feel so, like who I am doesn't ever connect with anybody in a real way. And suddenly I was making connections. So when I would call people up on the phone and I'd sing them something and I would feel this connection. And then, of course, I met my friend Jillian at that time on the Berkeley campus, and we kept running into each other with synchronicities. And I visited her, and I sung some of these lyrics that I had made up, and she said, oh, my God, this guy is really good. Now, I never thought of myself as being good, but she thought I was good. And then we started a relationship, and I said, geez, writing music is a lot more fun than learning how radios work and all this technical stuff. And so we started a rock and roll band. We did a duo. We drove around the country in a Volkswagen bus. And we're still friends. One day I'm going to have her on a Monday night as a guest because I am sure that if it wasn't for Jillian in my life at that time, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now because she profoundly changed my life and she helped me connect with this new program or this new part of myself, this holographic part of myself from a past lifetime. And this is how it works. We all have a lot of programs in there, but until either we take an initiative to test something or we meet somebody that is connected with something we did in the past that tends to support that new program, we just go along operating the programs we're familiar with, day in and day out. So, actually, I can't remember if I told this story, but it was a good story. I'll tell it again if I did. Forgive me if you heard it, but somewhere in that period, I started hitchhiking around the country, and then Jillian, my friend Jillian, she had married by this time, and I was like a vagabond, and I kept leaving her and coming back, and finally, she got tired of waiting for me, and she met a guy and married him, but we stayed friends. And she had discovered this guy who she thought could give readings like Edgar Cayce and could tell people who their past lives were. And so I had a reading from this guy, and he went through this whole story about how I had been a troubadour in another lifetime, and that I was repeating a lot of those patterns this lifetime. And he explained my relationship to my father. It's very interesting because he told me what had happened in this lifetime as a troubadour. And I'll tell the story. It's a good story, and maybe it'll help trigger some of you to some ideas and looking for things in yourself that you didn't know were there. And how things actually work karmically, because this was my first inside revelation, personal experience from my own life of how karma works. And the way he described it, he told me this story that I was going from town to town in England 1,000 years ago. And I was carrying the news from one town to the next. And the way England was, it was a lot of little townships, and each one had their own local political administration and lord. So there were lords and there were ladies in waiting, and that each one was independent, little city-states. And when I would come into one of these little townships, I would have to be accepted by the lord of that town. And when he accepted me, they would give me a piece of material which was their royal fabric, and I would pin that to my shirt. And when I had the royal fabric of that particular town, it would be like a credit card. And I would go in, the restaurants would give me food, the women would be open to me, and they didn't expect to get married. And the way he described it was, because I was a poet, that it was a great honor for someone to sleep with me. And then I would write a poem about them, and they would be kind of celebrated because there was an inspired poem about them. And that's exactly what I was doing this lifetime. I was hitchhiking around the country, and I had girlfriends in all these different cities, and I would write music, and it was like a phenomena. But it was all like very like invisible to the mass consciousness. It was just me having a great time meeting people everywhere and being celebrated and leaving one town and going to the next. So what I would do is I'd be playing music and I would be carrying the news, because in that time there were no newspapers, there was no telephones. It was only the troubadour who would go from town to town, and he would carry the news of what the neighboring city-states, neighboring townships were doing. And so there was this one particular town where I was not accepted by the lord in that town. I guess that's what they called him, a lord. And there was a lady in waiting who was part of the royal family that I was hot for. And there was no way that I could be with her unless I got the lordship's approval. And so I couldn't get his approval. And I tried to make myself important by telling stories about what the neighboring cities were doing, but I was exaggerating. I was exaggerating in order to be more important than I was with the regular facts. And so it didn't work. And so I had made this secret rendezvous to meet with this lady-in-waiting in an inn on the outskirts of town. And apparently they found out that she was going to meet me there, and they locked her in her room and wouldn't let her meet me. So I was at this inn, and there was a group of soldiers from this town that met another group of soldiers from the neighboring town that I was telling fibs about. And they were talking to each other, and they caught me in my exaggerations, and they decided to teach me a lesson. So what they did was they took their swords out, and they stripped me naked and humiliated me, and I thought they were going to kill me. But they weren't going to kill me. They just wanted to teach me a lesson. So I went into the inn very, very humiliated and probably naked. And later that day, the innkeeper was really... Now, I can't remember this. I'm trying to recreate how he might have felt. I humiliated him in front of all his guests. And maybe when I was there and I took a room there, maybe I was somewhat of a braggart and put myself up on a pedestal and being the hot troubadour. And suddenly, there were all these people that stripped me right in front of his inn. So he decided he was going to kill me. And they gave me hemlock, and I died. And apparently I was fairly young, and I probably, the guy who gave me this reading didn't tell me this, but they probably buried me in the backyard. And then he said, and that innkeeper was my father this lifetime, and that because he took my life, I had the opportunity to take an incarnation through him because there was an energetic connection. And my mother was his wife and my sister was his daughter. And it's like when I was young and brought up, my father and I did not get along. It was like subconsciously he was not very pleased to see me again. And it was like I could never please him. And no matter what I did, even I thought I was doing these great things because I was like 14 years old and I was into electronics and I was getting commercial radio licenses. And even when I was in college, I had all these great jobs compared to people. I mean, I had a career that I could have followed if I chose to. And no matter what I did, it wasn't good enough. And he would punish me for things that were unfair. And, you know, I reviewed my childhood when this guy told me this story. And I said, you know, there were these little quirks that happened that this story explained. And in this period of my life, he said that my girlfriend at that time was the lady in waiting who I never consummated the relationship with. And I met this woman and I said, this is the woman I've always been waiting for all my life. And we tried to have a relationship, but it wasn't really founded on a really deep polar bear. It was founded on probably me being hot for her. So the relationship ultimately didn't work. And when I was younger, I remember how kids in the backyard would play and they'd get into fights. And sometimes I would get into a fight with someone and there would be this crowd around me. And then an adult would come to break up the fight. And for some reason, I started crying. And it was like I wasn't hurt. It looked like I was hurt, but I wasn't. And I remembered, I wonder why I started to cry. And when I heard the story, I realized that circumstance of fighting and having a crowd around me triggered the memory of this old lifetime where I had a crowd around me that stripped me and humiliated me, and I was killed. But not by the crowd, but nonetheless. I said, that could make sense, because there was no other explanation for me starting to cry when there was this scene happening. And then another thing happened that was very interesting, And I'm sharing this with you because I learned a lot from this story about how habits and patterns get triggered from one lifetime to another, and that all of us have those patterns. We have ways that we, there's things that we experience that you could call them hang-ups, so to speak, that have no explanation. Why am I like this? Why did this happen? Why do I have this, these parents? Maybe some of you have had experiences of very oppressive parents, and it's like it implanted patterns in you that took a long time to get through, and maybe you're still getting through them. Well, in my case, this was the case for me, because when I left home, I had a tremendous amount of feeling unacceptable, unworthy. Nothing I did was good enough, and I didn't understand it, but when I heard the story and I started to connect with my father, I realized that it was something that came from my father. And my mother was always trying to protect me. Obviously, when I replay it on a cellular level in that other lifetime, she was very likely very guilty about what her husband had done. And that here I was back in the same family, and this time she was going to protect me because she wasn't going to, didn't want me to get killed again. And then we had a replay of getting poisoned. And that was, I was brought up in a Jewish family, and I used to go to Hebrew school. And Jewish people have a tradition of what they call koshering their food. And that has to do with buying special meat, taking the blood out. And this is like an ancient tradition that goes back thousands of years to purify things. So I had gone to class in Hebrew school, and I learned about koshering food for the first time. And I went home, and I asked my mother if she koshered her food. And she said she didn't. And for some inexplicable reason that made no sense to me until years later, I announced, and my father was there, that I'm not eating this unless it's kosher. And this was a very big issue for my father, because he was brought up in a very religious family, and his mother made him do everything according to the Jewish tradition. And when he left home, he discarded it all. And his mother was actually living in the house with us. And she had her own kitchen, and she would do her own cooking because she would only eat food that was kosher. And she was down in the basement with her own kitchen, and we were upstairs. And never, ever did we eat together, ever. And so I announced this dinner that I was not going to eat this food anymore because it wasn't kosher. And my father then took the food and stuffed it in my mouth. And God, when I tell this story, I get emotional even telling it. I ran upstairs and I spit it out, and he was screaming and yelling at me. And I would not eat meat for the next couple of weeks. And finally, my mother agreed to kosher her food, and she got into big arguments with my father. But for the rest of my time at home, I was eating kosher food, kosher meat. Now, the interesting thing was that when I would be out of the house, I would go to McDonald's and eat McDonald's burgers. And I used to say to myself, you know, I'm eating McDonald's. This isn't kosher. Why am I doing this? Why? In fact, they actually took me to a shrink when I was young and thought I was nuts because I insisted on this. And I could figure out why I had insisted on making my mother do this when I would go to McDonald's and eat McDonald's burgers. And until I heard that story, it was a mystery. And then I realized that subconsciously, I was getting back at my father for killing me and poisoning me. And that was the real thing behind that obsession that I had about eating kosher food. And subconsciously, it was irrational, and I was certainly not in a place of being conviction about it, but yet there I was reliving that past life. And after I heard that story, I realized I had a certain kind of realizations, and one was that I had to forgive my father for killing me. And the other was that, now I don't remember this, so this is reverse engineering. Apparently, when you're a spirit form, you have a certain degree of choice of who you're going to incarnate with, particularly if you're a little bit evolved, and you choose your parents. And I could ask myself, why would I choose these parents? Well, in thinking about it, I said, maybe I didn't have a lot of options. And this was, I wanted to be here in this time, in this period. And this was an option because there was a karmic link that it would allow me to have a life here. And so I chose that family to have the opportunity to have a life. And as I contemplated it, I said, well, if I had to choose again, knowing all that I would go through to be here in this period, would I make that choice, knowing how hard my life had been in my early years? And I said to myself, yes, I would have made that choice. So now I had taken responsibility for a choice that I think I made when I was not in a body, because I don't remember it, okay? I have the same veil everyone does, but I took conscious responsibility for the choice. And that meant that on some level, I agreed to the suffering I went through when I was young. And now I had the challenge of reprogramming myself and getting rid of this overlay that happened because of the family I was brought in, that I was no good, that I was worthless, that everything I did was wrong, and it took me quite a few years. I would say that something like that was that intense, probably it's still in my system. And people that have known me for a long time, like Terry, she knows me for years, and she knows how many things I've gone through this lifetime. Terry, are you on the line by any chance?
Yes, I am.
Okay. She knows all the changes I've gone through to overcome, I guess, it was like a disability, and how it felt like was my shoulders were always tight, my neck was tight, I was withdrawn, and I felt like who I was buried under something, and I didn't know how to get it out. I didn't even know I could get it out. I didn't even know I could go through it. And I would say that it was moving back into playing music and writing poems that started to allow me the first ability to express the deeper aspect of myself and put it into the world. Otherwise, no one knew who I was. I was a guy walking around that looked uptight all the time and didn't know how to unuptight myself and didn't know really how to connect with anybody in a real way. So I share that story because we all have stories. Now, I was lucky enough to hear my story, and hearing it helped me at that time go through it. And I know for many of you, there's not that opportunity to hear your story. But there is a story, and the things, how you feel right now, how you feel to be alive and in yourself, is only of this moment. It is not who you really are. And when we talk about expanding your hologram, we're talking about expanding into a higher aspect of yourself that is invisible to you. And I started out saying we were doing an experiment on this call. I've learned shortcuts on how to do that. When I was younger, I didn't have a shortcut. I didn't know, except I had to forgive my father. I had to do all this, you know, like positive affirmations in myself, and it just took forever to like get through this distortion. And why do we have shortcuts now? And the reason is because I've learned, and those people that have been working on these calls have learned, how to access the higher parts of our hologram without having to work out every detail in the lower aspects. Now, there was a time, and many of us are in that time, even now, although you don't have to be, the old period of time was if you had done something and if you had created karma, you had to uncreate it. So you had to actually be acting in a way that repaired the karma, so to speak. Like if you did something really bad, you would have to be really good, and that would balance it out so that you could forgive yourself for the bad. Because what happens is when we do things that are negative, part of our computer memorizes that program. And so it sits there like a latent program that surfaces perhaps as guilt. And the guilt makes you feel bad about yourself. You don't even know why you're guilty. You just know, I feel guilty or I feel unworthy. And that's because you have that program running in your computer. And in the old days, you had to undo the program. You had to come in with something that was really positive to change what was negative in the program. And I believe that that was the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And there's people that still do that. They get vengeance. They get jealous. They somebody does something to them, they have to get even. Well, that's just a external expansion of what we do to ourselves. We get even with ourselves. We hold these huge programs in our soul computer against ourselves because we've all been horrible in different lifetimes, I suspect. Most of us, many of us. And so we put ourselves in situations where maybe we have to punish ourselves because if we punish ourselves enough, we can balance out how horrible we were in some other lifetime, okay? So that is the old way of doing things. Now, I believe that, and I think this is true, that the epic of Jesus was a setting up of a new rule in this realm where you didn't have to balance everything in the way that you did in the past because there was this aspect of grace. And he came into this realm and he was able to connect holographically to what we've learned is a very high level of the Elohim, I would say, for grace to be in existence, and they've told us about it. And the way grace works is that instead of going through things at the lower level, it would be like if we use the computer analogy, we now have a virus cleaner that can go through and remove the viruses. But you have to access that high frequency so that you can get the assistance to repair your matrix. And that's one of the things we are doing in this group that we have ongoing. Our conference call group, our light body group, this phone call, we're being a guidance system to help people access these really high places that when you touch into it, it can reach back and touch you and help speed up this process of repairing all this damage that's been done to your matrix, and that you can open up and experience yourself as a part of divine creation with your matrix reaching back to source. And we've had many, many discussions about that. And we're working with these two group souls. One of them is the Elohim, and the Elohim is at the high level of this where they have explained how it works and how they can do this. But to do it, your antenna has to tune into their frequency, number one. And number two, you have to ask, because they won't violate your free will. Keep in mind, they're intelligent. They're intelligent, very intelligent. They can see you. They can watch you. But you can't see them except by feeling their energy. And when they project into your space, you can feel their energy. And so when we do these calls, they're here on the call. We've had ongoing communications, and I've asked every question under the sun, and they say that's true, and that even though we're thousands of miles apart, they can be accessing you right now. And many, many times on this call, we've taken a space to say, here they are. Can you feel them? Can you feel an energy in your space? Can you feel a radiance? If you're feeling something, you're feeling their energies. And you've made a connection. And you're learning how to tune into their frequency. And the more you can tune into their frequency, and the more you ask for their help in helping repair your own distortions, that's a mutual thing. You're reaching and they're reaching back, okay? You're not giving up your power to some huge source and being, helpless. You're not. It's a co-creative act. And you have to be part of it, and they can be part of it. And in fact, in the highest level of truth, you and they are one. You're not separated. Just like you and me are one. We're not separated. First, we're separated in our physical bodies because we're all over the place. But in spirit, we're not separated. In our holograms, which where we're energy, we can just intend to be together, and we are. And this is how prayer works. We've talked about that, that when you intend your energy to move into the space of someone else, and they're open to it, they can feel you. The other night, I sent an email to someone that I hadn't spoken to for a few days, and at the very, very same moment, to the minute that I sent the email to them, they had sent an email to me. So we were connecting in our holograms, and that's the way it manifested. We crossed at exactly the same minute. So it's 7:49, and Terry's on the line, and I haven't asked Elohim to speak to us. You know, one of the things about not having them speak to us and having me talk about them and bring their energy in is that it gives you the experience that you can do it too. You don't need a voice. You don't need the verbal communications to tune into their frequency. And in fact, if you emphasize the verbal communications too much, people tend to give up their power. They say, well, what do they say? Tell us what to do. And that is not the highest connection. A voice is not the highest connection of them. The highest connection is blending with their energies. I'm saying the word Elohim a lot because I'm using the word grace, and I've learned to believe that the grace is an Elohim aspect. And, of course, we have the Ra group, which is got a different way of connecting with us in a very more close personal way. And part of the goal of doing these calls is to be able to put out the energies to all of you who are listening so that you get used to connecting. I'd like to tell you, if you happen to be been listening to these calls and you're not subscribed to Message a Day, I highly recommend that you do, because this is a program that's really working, where you can subscribe to a message every day, from a verbal message from the Elohim group and the Ra group, and just by reading them every day helps you to tune into their frequency. And there's no charge for this. And we do things all week on the conference line that are helping people learn how to tap into their energies and hold their frequencies. And at this point, that was the experiment that we started a couple of years ago. Can people connect with them through a phone line, through my voice, through reading their words? Because I have to know it works. I'm not here to start a new believe in this or believe in that. Beliefs are very weak compared to experience. And to be able to personally be an anchor for these energies is the goal. Now, another thing you guys can do is read my book. Of course, both books, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and the new book that just came out called Questions and Answers with the Elohim, which is a downloadable product. So you can actually get this book as soon as we hang up and read it tonight, and that will help reinforce this connection tremendously. Reading their words connects you with them. Here's the website, ElohimQ&A.com. ElohimQ&A.com. And if you go to purchase the book, which is selling for $16, and it's an e-book, and you get a free channeling of the Elohim with it, if you put in the discount code, Happy New Year, you'll get an immediate $5 off. So if you haven't read that book, I highly suggest that if you connect with the work we're doing, and no matter where you are in the world, you can get it. And it's got 100 pages of their exact words in our channelings, which will help trigger you. So right now, we're going to say goodbye, EBS. We've gone over. And if you're on the telephone conference line...